Go.
Welcome to the Spiritual Revolution.
Yeah. Wow, that was a good one.
Spiritual Revolution.
Nice. Should we say welcome?
Welcome to the Spiritual Revolution. I'm here.
I'm here. And who are you?
Who are you?
Who are you? Yeah, who are you? Who are you?
Who are you?
All right, welcome to the Spiritual
Involution, the Spiritual Involution. I'm David.
And I'm Katie.
And we're very happy to be with you today.
And we should actually go over what a Spiritual Involution means. We haven't done that the past few. So you tell me. Before you get the chance to tell me to tell them, I'm going to ask you.
Good idea, woman. In the teaching of the science of mind, somewhere is the language that in order to evolve, one must involve. So involution precedes evolution. So if we're looking to spiritually evolve, why not do it on purpose by spiritually involve? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's what we're doing.
I like it.
And that's what we're endeavoring to. Hey, Katie, I want to talk about something today.
Yeah, you said you had a topic idea, but you didn't want to tell me, so it's just...
Well, the topic idea is mostly a question. I have a lot of questions for you.
But you're the preacher.
I know, but...
I feel like I'm supposed to ask you the question.
Which means I just articulate the vision and the messages of people around me. So as the preacher guy...
Is that actually the key?
Probably, yeah. Just pay attention to powerful people around you. Mimic and imitate and echo what they're up to and watch your life change.
Right. Is that how you come up with your sermons, though?
Mostly, yeah.
And when you come up, you do that, and then you put it in this amazing way everyone can digest so well. That's
speaking of digestion.
That's a good gift.
I know this is a lot of preface, and I'm speaking with my mouth full, but Katie made some jasmine rice, and then she poured some hot jasmine tea over the rice. So I'm eating it out of a mug in front of an open door, and the wind is blowing through the redwood trees, and there's a smell of orange blossoms coming in while Katie has thieves oil diffusing in a diffuser. It's totally hippie house right now.
Yeah, a lot of senses going on.
Yeah. So here's
what's
up.
Thought of you with the rice because it's stale rice from this morning.
Excellent.
And I almost threw it away, but I was like,
David's
coming.
Comes over.
He's coming and he eats everything.
I do.
And so I thought, I'm going to save this and put it in some tea for you.
So before we lose too many more people,
okay.
Here's what was up for me, Katie. I noticed that in my world, I'm surrounded by people who are dead sure about some things. Like, they're just dead sure what's going to happen with a virus, dead sure what's going to happen with an economy, they're dead sure what's going to happen with an election. And being so sure doesn't leave one open, I think, to new possibilities. Mm. And there's something that you do really, really well. Like, I've been watching you for a long time, and I want to know your secret. Here's the question. How is it that you're able to communicate and be in relationship, whether it's on Facebook or on telephone or in person, with people who are so cocksure, so dead sure? And the way you present your information, it's always more of a question or more of a, hey, here's what I've been doing, or I'm not so sure about that. Your uncertainty is very inviting.
Hmm.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
It is, and it's interesting you bring that up because I've also wondered if it's a fault I have in some regards.
No.
Okay, you say no.
No.
But here's the deal.
Not for the listeners, not for the outside, maybe for your husband and your kids. But for those of us who are looking to tap into some undelivered communication, we're tapping into some download that is yet to be downloaded. There's no place for it to be delivered or to be downloaded if our heads are already full of certainty. And you invite a way of being that is, tell me more about that. Or, let me do a little more research. And being around you is really inviting and exciting and liberating. Now, maybe not for...
I have a question for you.
Good, go ahead.
And then I'll go back to why I think it's a fault maybe. But, well, okay. Not complete fault, but have you ever had a paradigm crumble that you actually thought was solid?
Every day. Mm-hmm.
And to you, does that make you more curious and less likely to take that I'm so sure stance.
Can you ask that again?
So if you've had a paradigm crumble, and I mean like a paradigm, like the world is flat and now you realized it's a circle or sphere, kind of crumbling, where you were so sure, you would bet your life on something.
Yes.
And then you had it crumble.
Yes.
And it's humbling, right? For me, it was humbling. Like, wow, I was so off base on that. I didn't even know that I didn't know what I didn't know.
Okay.
And having that experience, I think, has led me to a place that I find it really difficult to be 100% certain on things I'm even pretty certain about. I live like a sliver of possibility always that I could be wrong.
Yes.
And I also know that to get people to see your point of view, it's far more likely to stick if you ask them the questions that you asked yourself to get you to the outcome that you're at.
Okay.
Rather than, you know, there's nothing more annoying, in my opinion, is somebody telling me what to think.
A know-it-all.
I don't know if anybody really responds to that well unless you have worked so hard to get to an elevated place in society where you're known to be a genius. Like, all right, if Albert Einstein wants to come and tell me what's up with the universe, he could probably just straight up tell me and I'll give you...
And chances are he would tell you in such a way that would be inviting and palatable and liberating.
Right.
But, you know, what the paradigms that I've had that have crumbled have been paradigms of non-workability.
What do you mean?
So I've not had a paradigm of sweetness or happiness that's crumbled that hasn't actually turned out to be a good thing. What I heard you say, actually what I heard you not say, I heard you ask me, have I had a paradigm about life that I liked that crumbled? That's what I heard you not say.
When I say paradigm, are you talking like
metaphorical
kind of?
I'll use J.K. Rowling.
Okay.
Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, book 3. There is a paradigm in the book, and the paradigm is about who's the bad guy. That's a paradigm. Who's the bad guy? And you spend about 3/4 of the book believing that the bad guy is the bad guy.
Right.
And in fact, there's all kinds of clues to prove to you that the bad guy is the bad guy. And then you realize towards the end of the book that you were dead wrong.
Right.
In your cocksuredness, you might be stymied that you were so wrong. And then you'll go back and even read the book again and realize all the signs of your wrongness were there, but you didn't see them.
Right.
So that was a paradigm that ended for me. And that actually altered my view of the world somewhat, because when I was so sure about who the bad guy is, and that's metaphorical, who's the bad guy, whether it's a virus or an illness or a politician or an economy or a spouse or an ex-spouse, I may be wrong.
Right.
And that's a sweet revelation.
That is. I think I replace the only difference I'm thinking and how we're talking about this topic, and I just want to make sure we're on the same page so we're talking about the same thing. I don't know if I put any emphasis on a bad guy. My emphasis is on truth. And so the truth in this story was that the bad guy wasn't
a
bad guy. But there could be other truths that might not necessarily be bad. They just, you know, are not the truth.
Yes.
And sometimes it's hard to know the truth if the other side is not even known to you yet. Because how would you know? And so that's always sort of the tricky part. Like, how do we look at all angles and then also leave room for the fact that we just don't know things? Like, as human beings, we haven't gotten to a place where we probably know a fraction of how the world truly works and interacts with our bodies and all this stuff. So how do we navigate a system where we're willing to stand strong on a stance, enough to be powerful in it, but not enough to stand arrogantly to when a truth does unfold, like you get to the book 3 or whatever book it was, where new evidence has come up and it's saying, uh-oh, what you thought was wrong. Can you be in that sweet spot of strength but bendability.
That's exactly what I wanted to talk about today. You have literally just described what I notice you doing every day.
Well, I'm really happy that I come off that way to you.
Katie, in all the responses, like if I post something on Facebook, like this month I've been posting things for Lent, what will you give up? And there's a portion of our society that is very easily triggered when it comes to pharmaceuticals. And the pharmaceutical companies and big pharma is what it's called. And those folks who are easily triggered find, I think they find an outlet or an avenue through which they can be heard or express. And what I noticed is it would be very easy to shut those folks down or delete the comments or stop the conversation because it sometimes seems irrational. But the beauty is you pipe in by inviting a sweet spot of curiosity that allows me, the reader, to hear more about the person who's triggered, and sanity begins to prevail, and reason begins to prevail, and collaboration and helpfulness begins to prevail. Did that make sense to you?
It does, and it's hopeful for me because the way I see things right now with all this triggering, seems to be the word trigger is like the N word, but on so many levels, I have noticed that there is not such a black and whiteness to everything, even on climate change, right? I was open enough to be like, I'll tell you, trying to find a scientist in the opposing view was hard. Finally, I found a few. Their names are eluding me right now, but they made some interesting comments, and I kind of came to realize, I think for science, at least.
Pause. Stop.
What?
Remember that thought, but I want to point out.
Okay.
Some of our listeners right now are arguing already.
Right.
They're literally already arguing with details or a cocksuredness that. I just wanted to.
Oh yeah.
I can smell it. It's happening.
I'm not even advocating that they're right. I just like to know both sides. And the fact that I couldn't find the other side made me worried because I've noticed that when the mainstream doesn't like a point of view, they purposefully silence it. So certain videos were purposely taken down. Certain things are harder to find. And so anyway, the point being what I realized was I don't think anyone is arguing that the world is getting hotter. It's just what is behind the heat. And to me, it's an irrelevant point. What I see is that we are treating the earth poorly. We need to clean it up. The fact that I can't drink water from a river is worrisome. The fact that I can see that there's aluminum, or not see it, but you can test now, and there's aluminum in our air now that we're breathing. So, it's really a good idea, though, to be able to, if you're going to stand your ground on something, to know every angle of it. And I love that expression of try to prove yourself wrong. Like, have your point of view, now oppose it. Now see if you can prove it wrong. Can you?
That takes some time.
It takes a lot of time. But I love that exercise because it really grounds you.
Do you actually practice that?
I do.
Have you done that?
I mean, I've done it with the pharmaceuticals. Uh-huh. I've done it with the Bible. Like, the minute I figured out that there was the Gnostic texts and that the Nicaea Council got together and basically put together the St. James Bible so they could have a version of the Bible that works for everybody, was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Wait, now I got to go figure out what these Gnostic texts are about. Why were they left out of the Bible? And they have a whole nother story. They have a whole nother story. And so much of our civilization is based on the Bible.
Yes.
And it kind of blew my mind. That might have been one of the paradigms that crumbled, you know, for me. Like, what is not told? What are the stories that are purposely left out? And the idea that history is told by its victors is ever true, right? You need to look beyond that. And it does take a lot of time. And I think I'm at a point where I realize I know so little that I hope I live a long time just to keep learning about things that were never taught to me, because it's fascinating. And I kind of feel like it's a matrixy feeling, though, right?
We're yeah.
Like, holy crap, everything I thought I knew, I don't know. And I'm beyond this level of reality where I'm looking at people arguing.
Can I just take the other pill and wake up from this?
Well, I don't know. Now, once you're in it, you know, you can't take the other pill. But you definitely see from an outside perspective just kind of this insane machine that's happening. And you just want to kind of stop it and have people start to have open dialogues. Like, what happened to that? What happened to open dialogues where nothing is taboo? And if I think I want to add something to a point of view, and why is it triggering? Why can't I say, you know, now people don't get mad. This is not my point of view, but why can I not say, hey, the earth was actually hotter 150,000 years ago. They found cores from Antarctica that prove that it was even hotter than today. That is a theory. I mean, what would you say to that? Like, okay, now you say, no, that can't be true because...
No, I just say, huh.
Right, but
doesn't
if you...
Doesn't surprise me.
If you were really into the science part, you probably could battle back and give me another counterpoint, and I might say, huh. And we might be saying, huh, huh, huh. And maybe there is an answer that's a mixture of both, you know? Maybe we are on an upswing naturally, and that we are propelling it even further with our misuse of...
So let me jump in. Let me jump in because I get excited while you're talking. Why observing you is so impactful to me, you, and by the way, there's a lot of people in my life that are like you a little bit, is part of spirituality for me ends in a question mark and not in a period. So part of exploring and discovering and observing is the miracle of surprise, the miracle of the future yet to be, and not everything being absolutely defined.
Right.
So mostly what's up for me is I like how you invite a pensive perspective. And why I wanted to talk about that today is I want to invite people who are participating by listening to maybe try on observing and taking in information and not defending or protecting your view and just going, huh, tell me more.
And it takes a little bit of, like you say, slowing down. And there's times when I recognize my ego is too invested in a point of view when somebody challenges it. And to look at that kind of feeling, you know, do you know that feeling? Do you get it?
Yeah, but it defies my reason. It's not like I can stop and think about it. Usually there's a reaction in me that tries to stop somebody or disappear them.
Yeah.
And then when I have an awareness that, oh, that wasn't the best tactic, then I have to go clean it up.
It's a muscle I feel like you have to work out. But I notice even online or even in conversations, if something is said to me that I feel like this intense urge to defend a point of view, it means I have some sort of work to do in my mind. Like after I see it and hopefully not react to it, it's... One, I have to think, okay, I'm pushing that other person to think beyond something, and now they're pushing me to think beyond something. And it feels, maybe it's scary, you know, because maybe my ground is wobbling from their comment. And I need to embrace the wobbling. I need to embrace failing and grow. Because that's how you grow. If I'm searching for the truth, if we're all searching for the truth as much as we can know it, you have to be wrong sometimes. That's how science works. That's how life works. And to me, it's something we should celebrate. Mistakes, like, oops, I went for it, but I didn't know enough. Now I know enough, and now I'm going to change my perspective.
Yeah.
And I'm reading a book, actually, about Darwin, and he was very misunderstood as survival of the fittest, right? And it turns out, at least this book is saying, it's survival of the most adaptable. So... Which makes it a totally different ball game, right? It's not about conquering and it's about who can maneuver and grow and change with whatever is occurring, you know? That's how we evolve or involve.
Are we about to have a visitor?
I believe so. Tess, you wanna say hi?
Hello, Tess. Nice outfit.
All right, Tess is back to her spot. The popsicle?
Yes. Oh, she got a popsicle. It was Pirate's Booty. I got to watch a negotiation between Pirate's Booty and an apple and a banana. And then, popsicle became an option. And she lit up popsicle it was, and now she's marched right back to whatever she was doing.
They're healthy popsicles, so I feel a little like I get a secret win.
I like it. Why, what is it?
It works out. It's just fruit. All right, what were we talking about, though? I forget. Sidetracked. Oh, but Stan...
About being wrong sometimes.
Being wrong sometimes.
And celebrating being wrong. And we talked about wobbly. I was thinking about spirituality. And part of spirituality is being teachable and not being so certain and being open to a little bit of mystery. A little bit of mystery.
Mystery is good. The area that I was saying in the beginning, though, that I felt fault in was, I think I go to such great lengths to make sure that I'm not coming off like I'm preaching or that I'm telling somebody what to think, that I do this self-deprecating often, kind of under cutting myself in a way.
For example?
For example, our Christmas cards. On the back of it, I did a little write-up about what life's been like, you know?
Yeah.
And Gina actually brought it up to me, and I really think it's a good attribute of a good friend to bring it up. She's like, I loved your Christmas card, but, you know, you really devalued your role in the family. You kind of said, like, John puts up with your crazy hippiness or something to that extent, because, you know, I wrote about how I did all these protests and I'm doing all this, and I'm like, and then John's been a good backbone supporting my craziness or something. And I think when I wrote that, what I was trying to do was, I don't know, like, find a place where I don't come off righteous or pompous or anything like that. But, you know, Gina said, you should own this. You're an amazing, strong woman who is standing up for what she believes in. Like,
and let me step on your words on purpose. I was moved by what you wrote because I think a powerful, strong woman is able to raise those around her, which is what I read. Like, you raise them. And the real chuckle is everybody knows who the powerhouse is. You don't actually have to say it. People who have to say it, I think, are actually overcompensating.
Yeah. So maybe I'm wondering, there's other people in my life who have said that too. Like, don't use those words of doubt. Stand stronger in your stance. And I'm like,
oh, come on.
Do I need to?
No.
Okay. Well, good.
I have to just be in your kitchen and just watch you move. Like, you don't even have to say what to do. I just watch you and I want to mimic what you're doing.
Okay. Well, good, because it kind of put some doubt into my head, trying to maybe look inward at, am I holding back some sort of strength and fear of judgment from others? Like, do I really care what you think? But I do care what you think, because I want the world to grow in a way that I would like to see it grow, and so I would like to foster that growth, you know? And if I come off as an arrogant know-it-all, well, one, I know I'm not a know-it-all because I'm very aware I don't know it all. Anyway, I'm glad you said that because I was just thinking about that recently. Like, do I hide too much? Do I hide behind something?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. Well, thank you.
And think about the people who are doing what some of your friends might suggest you do. Think about them. Do you sometimes get the sense that they don't really believe it, so they keep saying it or insisting it because they don't believe it?
Mm.
And the people who really believe it don't actually have to say it.
Yeah.
They don't. And one of the successes, please forgive me for, this audience probably won't like this, but one of the successes in any military regime is the military leader who values the people who are under him or her, like raises those people under him or her. That's what creates strong people.
Right.
You're so good at that.
Thank you.
Really, really good at that.
It reminds me of this book I read a long time ago when I was in Australia as a suggestion from a friend. I think it's a Japanese emperor story called Taiko. Have you heard of it?
Taiko. I'm going to come back to Taiko. I wanted to say just the thought of Gina makes me happy. I miss her.
I miss her dearly.
I really miss her.
And, you know, I do like when a friend tells you something you might not want to hear.
Of course.
I just like that.
There's
like,
value in that.
You know?
Especially when straight up sister to sister. Yes, I don't want to undercut what Gina said, because if Gina told me to do something, I'd probably do it.
Yeah. Oh, well, she's so smart.
But she's not here, so I don't have to protect myself.
Yeah. We love her.
So I'll say Taiko.
Taiko. It was about three emperors, three leaders who eventually one rises to be the emperor, if I'm remembering it correctly. But one is a very passive leader who just kind of lets things be, and there's something beautiful to that. And there's another aggressive leader who is just all about force. And then there's Tycho, and I feel like I might be saying his name wrong, who really joins the people. He comes up from nothing. So you get this coming up from nothing story, this inner strength. And there's a story, you know, when you don't remember a lot about a book, but you remember like one part that just sticks with you. And this is the part I remember, was that he was in charge of a whole army, and they needed to build a wall to protect opposing force.
Yeah.
And other leaders would sit back and tell their army what to do. And his wall got built the quickest because he joined them. He stayed up all night with his fellow, you know, soldiers who technically were beneath him. But he rose and he went in and did the grueling labor work that everybody, you know, else was not doing that was in his role. And that gave, you know, a real sense of loyalty to him. And also that idea that, you know, you're not better than anybody else. Anyway, when you were talking about that, I just, that story came to mind. And I just like that idea of operating that way.
Leaders eat last is how it's coined. Leaders eat last. I remember watching my mother. She always waited till everybody was done before she ate. I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah. But you're quite the leader. Do you ever feel pressure as a leader? I mean, you're a real leader.
I'm not near the leader I'd like to be.
Really?
No.
Huh. Why? What would you like to be?
Like you.
And I don't know. I don't.
You're like the, Gina.
Yeah.
Like Gina's husband. Like John. Like Mao.
You are those.
Like my staff.
So do you think you have a problem admitting your strengths?
No. No, I don't. I don't. But what's really moving me at this stage in my life is what I wanted to talk to you about today, and what we're talking about is the ability to not be so cocksure.
Yeah. But there's something you do every Sunday where so many people are watching you.
Oh that.
I mean, I don't know if you're aware of how many people take your word. Really, you have a lot of weight in your what you say every Sunday. There's a lot of people who put you really high up there.
Well,
so that to me is a lot of pressure. I don't know if I'd want that.
All the more reason to hang out with people like you. So.
Well.
No, seriously, because that impacts how I show up on a stage. And what it is I have to say, or what's triggered me, or what's comforted me while I watch people around me triggered, you know?
Do you ever find it difficult, or does it change your message when you sit? Do you think about what I say right now is going to have a domino effect, and what kind of weight should I put in that? Rather than just going off the cuff and like just saying whatever happens to be in your heart, knowing that it has that wide of a net.
I haven't mastered that yet, but I'm dealing with conscious competence. Like now I'm aware of what I need to do as often as I can do to be effective. But I still have habits and patterns and reactions that get triggered and come out of my mouth or out of my actions, and I have to clean it up. So, but at least now I'm mostly aware almost immediately when what I say is not in alignment with what I wanted to be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, when there's a conflict, you feel
it happens almost immediately. Like the minute it comes out of my mouth, it's like, oh no.
Well, there's been times on Sunday when you've actually said that. You're like, something I just said is not connecting or going, and you'll kind of even change course in that moment.
Oh, that's different than what I thought you were asking. And well, I'm uncomfortable now.
You're uncomfortable.
I'm uncomfortable now.
Well, I don't want to make you uncomfortable, but I do like it when I do.
I know you do. You kind of relish that.
Well, I won't put you in the hot seat, but I always do find it interesting when I see you. Even last Sunday when you you spoke about the fear around the coronavirus right now, and I was thinking, man, in some ways you have to be so careful with what and how you say things, because you have, I don't know, roughly 300 people, if you think about who's there and the live streamers or more.
It's maybe about 500 of them.
500 people taking those words and using whatever filters in their head to then make an action happen from it. And it just seems, in certain instances, it seems like a lot. You know, we're talking about leadership and we're talking about questioning and I always wonder about that.
I wonder about being a parent. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's no joke.
Yeah, it's no joke.
Yeah. There's a lot of pressure if you think too hard about it.
But then you have the mystery and miracle of a popsicle.
Yeah, for now. And I don't know if that'll work later in teenage years.
Well, you just exchange the popsicle for something else. What is the brand or the make of those popsicles?
Oh, I don't know. It's
It's just pureed fruit.
Yeah, they're from Whole Foods with vitamin C in them.
Of course.
I'm sure there's still a lot of sugar in it, though. But at least it's not like, those Otter Pops.
Or Snicker Bar. Oh, yeah. Otter Pops.
I like Otter Pops. Snickers? Yeah, they have the nuts at least. You get something good in there.
It doesn't take much to trigger you. So, I don't think I have anything else right now.
What does that mean? It doesn't take much to trigger you?
Well, I just mentioned something, a Snickers bar, and right away you dissect it. Well, let's see. The cocoa powder is probably good for this. Peanuts, at least a little bit of fat.
Yeah, some nut in there.
Of course.
All right, and you want to go back to the awkward conversation of leadership?
No, okay. I'm actually okay with, closing this out with mostly the question, am I willing this week to not be so dead sure, cocksure about stuff, and maybe just approach information with a bit of a, tell me more.
Huh. Yes, and I'll just add on to that. Always have a huh, but also stand for something.
Okay, and so it is.
That's what I'll say. All right, and so it is. Ta-ta for now.
Ta.